Well, here's a housekeeping tip for followers of Jesus. This is the best one, I reckon. This is my best tip. You ready? If you want to have a nice tidy house once a week, host a growth group. Do you do that? The Bible study speed clean session? Yeah, it is the best thing. In a busy life, all of a sudden, you want to make a good impression. You want to make it look like you're not a bunch of slobs and live in a pigsty all the time. And so the living room gets a bit of a touch up. You want to give that good impression. Well, in our passage today, Paul says your household needs to give a good impression, a good gospel impression. Now, Paul uses the household to show how followers of Jesus are called to live gospel-shaped lives. This is not just for married people. It's not just for children. The principles that Paul uses to apply to husband and wives, children and parents, slaves and masters, can be applied to all lives. And so what Paul is doing is he's peeking into the window of a first century Christian household, and he's saying this is how gospel-shaped living is achieved. So how can the way I relate to those who are close to me communicate the good news of the gospel? That's our question. How can the way I relate to those close to me communicate the good news of the gospel? Let's take a look. Paul begins in verse 21 with the overarching gospel principle. The NIV, I think, does a great job of this. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. I use the ESV. It changes it around. It doesn't change it, but it just divorces it from this section, puts a clear line under it. But I think this, Paul is saying, this sets the tone. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. There's a lot of confusion about this submit thing when I'm organising weddings with couples, particularly non-Christian couples. I don't want that submit passage, whatever you preach on at the wedding. I don't want that submit passage. So there's lots of confusions. Let's take a look at the context. If you flick your eye up to chapter 5, verse 1 and 2, we see that Paul says there, therefore be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love. As Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. So in the way that Christ submitted to the Father's will and came and gave his life for us, so submit to one another in Christian living. So we understand immediately submitting cannot be a degradation. You cannot be lesser, because if God the Son submitted to God the Father, then there is nothing inherently diminutive of submitting. You're not lessening yourself as a person. And so we need to start with that concept. Submit as Christ submitted to the Father. It's not demeaning. And Christ submitted for the good of others. So when we think of submit, give up self-centeredness and adopt humility toward one another. We treat each other with love. We serve each other as we recognize that we are all image bearers of God. So that's the context. That's the way we honour Christ. We submit to one another out of reverence for Christ, out of fear for him, understanding who he is. He is our King. We live to serve him. And so we submit to one another. It's not demeaning. It's a way of worship. It's a life of worship. Now that's the gospel principle that Paul is now going to expand on as he takes a peek through the window of the first century Greco-Roman household. Who honoured Jesus. Now, before we enter the house, we need to know different culture. That was a different culture to our culture. Sometimes it's confronting and confusing. Paul is speaking into an ideal, a gospel household. So we don't live in this culture. Some of you may not be living in a house where everyone is a follower of Jesus. He's using some aspects of home life to communicate the gospel truth to all believers. So this is not just for married couples with kids and slaves. That's good, isn't it? The message that Paul is communicating and that he wants us to, us as followers of Jesus to live out is that the gospel brings dignity, it brings freedom, and it brings hope. They're the three things we're going to have a look at from this passage. We won't go through the passage line by line. We'll take those concepts. The gospel gives dignity, it gives freedom, and it gives hope. So let's take a look. Firstly, gospel dignity. The world that Paul is speaking into is a man's world. People talk about today's world, particularly Western world, you know, it's led by people who are pale, stale and male. But in Paul's day, these guys were the ultimate household authority. Probably weren't pale, but men decided if their newborn babies would live or die. Men had complete call on their children. They could punish, sell or kill. The power. Men had complete control over slaves. Buy, sell, punish, kill. Wives, children and slaves had no voice, no standing, no dignity. But take a look at this. Take a look at what Paul is doing in this passage. Verse 22, 5:22. Have a look. He says, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. He is addressing the wife. In chapter 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. We used to have that verse written on our fridge, point our kids to it. They loved it. But it's interesting, isn't it? Paul is addressing children, unheard of in that culture, and slaves, chapter 6, verse 5. Bond slaves, obey... It does. My voice does this once a week. Bond slaves, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart, as you would Christ. Notice here that Paul is addressing the wives, the children, the slaves. He's bringing dignity. So in the gospel, you have dignity. In the gospel, you are called to obey Jesus. Whatever situation you've been placed in, but you have the dignity to make the call to serve your Lord. That's astounding, really. Wives submit, children obey, slaves obey. Make that decision as those under Christ who are seeking to honour him. Gospel dignity. Ephesians is a letter to families in Asia Minor. Paul would have expected this letter to be read out at the church gathering. And so he understands that there will be women, wives, children and slaves in the church community. Gospel brings dignity. Doesn't matter what the world says you are. As we come together as God's people, we are brothers and sisters in Christ. We are not all the same. Sometimes over Christmas I don't mind doing a jigsaw puzzle, just having it on the table, and as you walk past you put a little bit and piece. Every piece is different, isn't it, in the jigsaw puzzle? Every piece is important, absolutely important. If you're missing one piece, how frustrating is it when you get to the end and there's one piece? It doesn't matter how small it is, and doesn't even matter if it's on the side, it gets my OCD. In fact, I got CDO. It's like OCD, it's just in alphabetical order. But you see, every piece is important, but not every piece is the same. And in fact, the difference there provides the joy in a way. We are not the same, we are different. However, we display the sufficiency of the gospel. Understand this. We display the sufficiency of the gospel as we live out that difference. We show the power of the gospel bringing dignity to every person as we live out that difference. We are called to live gospel-shaped lives, whatever position we find ourselves in, and then we fit together to present a picture of the gospel. That's what Paul's saying. The gospel brings dignity. And again, that is seen in Paul's addressing husbands and fathers and masters. Paul is not seeking an uprising against the system. He's not preaching down with the patriarchy. He is not diminishing the place of or the role of authority. In fact, he shows how the gospel brings great dignity to authority as well. Husbands, love your wives, chapter 5, verse 25. Fathers, do not exasperate your kids. It's annoying, isn't it? Because that's so much fun. But don't exasperate your kids, but bring them up in the faith in the Lord. And masters, do not abuse your slaves. It doesn't matter what society says. This is how you are to act. Everyone in the system has a role, and the gospel invests everyone with great dignity. So understand that. Jigsaw puzzle, all the bits are important. The missing one drives you mad. Through the gospel, you have been given dignity, saved through the sacrifice of God the Son, whether you're married or not, whether you're a parent or not, whatever position you are in society, in the gospel, you have dignity, loved, chosen, cherished in Christ. It's good news, isn't it? So we have the gospel brings dignity. The gospel brings hope. Now, the Christian household lives out the story of the eternal good news of the gospel, our true hope. The married relationship lived in a Christ-honouring way expresses the gospel hope on offer to all people, because living under God's authority brings hope. That's the truth of the matter. Living under God's authority brings hope. Paul is speaking into a situation much different from ours. The wife was the property of the husband. There were no questions about in that society. There's no question about the wife submitting to the husband. Of course she does. That's exactly right in that society. But Paul says to the Christian wife, submit not to society's demands, but to Christ's calling. Take a look at verse 22 to 24. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its saviour. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Submit to your own husband out of trust for God and to honour King Jesus. Doesn't actually say what submitting looks like, does it? Doesn't give a list of this is how wives are to submit to husbands. It does not mean, what it cannot mean today, is that the wife is downtrodden. We'll get to that in a minute, but husbands love your wives. So it cannot mean downtrodden. It does not excuse domestic violence. As a church, we stand against domestic violence, and we need to say that, because when the Bible is saying wives submit to your husbands, it is not condoning or supporting domestic violence in any way. I don't know how much clearer I can be on that. But if that's an issue, please come and have a chat to me or someone. We'll have someone else if you can have a chat to, a lady if you need. So the church in no way condones that. It's not saying the wife has no say, and it's not even saying that the husband always gets the last say in everything. That's not how it's working, but it's interesting, isn't it? Paul does not actually say, this is how you submit, tunk, 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 tunk. I think Paul is giving the wisdom behind the command, and he's saying to each couple, you work through how you honour Christ in your relationship and in your stage of life as a married couple under these provisions. It does mean a respect for the leadership role of the husband. Verse 33. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Now, gospel leadership in the home, Paul says that should be honouring and nurturing and cause flourishing for all. As we saw in verse 33, husbands are called to love their wives as Christ loved the church. He's not talking about romantic love here, although that is not excluded. But love is a choice, a commitment to serve with self-sacrificial leadership. Okay? It's interesting, isn't it? Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. And now look at the instruction for husbands. Husbands, you men out there, and me included, love your wives as Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? Gave himself up for her that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. See, Christ loved the church and did everything for the church, that she may be presented to God as holy and blameless. And this came through his self-sacrifice. So the instruction for husbands here is that loving the wife, using your authority in the household, is to serve, and to serve for the flourishing of your wife. The truth is that your wife needs to be, should be, more godly because she knows you, because you are her husband, that you are investing in her and in ensuring that she is growing in her godliness, her love for Christ, and in the same, so, and I say that because in verse 28, Paul says, in the same way, husbands love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. We are one. And that's what Paul talks about. You become one flesh, husband and wife. For no one, verse 29, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church. Anyone in their right mind looks after their body well. And it becomes more of a challenge as the older you get, doesn't it? It's hard work. But still we persist. Because anyone in their right mind looks after, of course they look after their own body. And so that must be husband's attitude to wife. You love her, you cherish her, and you ensure that she is flourishing. You are leading for the good of another. You have been given responsibility for the good of another, the flourishing of another, the godliness of another. Your responsibility as you oversee the house is for the emotional, physical and spiritual health of those you care for. And I've got to say, if that was true of our marriage, like if that was true of the man, then what woman wouldn't want to be married to a guy like that? I asked that at our young people's growth group during the week, and the girls are like, yeah. Sounds good. Of course it's good. Because it's not a husband coming in, I'm the boss of the house, oh, you do what I say. He's using his authority, he's God-given, to love and care for those under his authority. In that time, Christians were accused of wrecking society with their subversive behaviour and teaching. It's much the same today, isn't it? If we lived in Sydney, the aftermath of the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras would be in the air this morning. When I started ministry, the view of marriage was it was just a bit of paper and no one needed it. I don't know if you ever heard that, but that was the thing. These days, it's viewed as a human right and even open to same-sex couples. And church are denying people equality and love. So the culture is not clear on marriage, but the Bible is very clear. The nature of the marriage relationship is not determined by culture. Headship is not determined by culture. It's determined by God. Verse 31 and 32, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother, hold fast to his wife, the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. Marriage represents the relationship between Christ and his church. So the biblical understanding of marriage, our definition at MPC of marriage, one man to one woman to the exclusion of all others for life. Marriage communicates the gospel's hope, God's eternal plan of salvation. And the authority that reflects Jesus' own authority is loving, self-giving authority for the good of those under that authority. Now, this is how I understand Paul's imperative to children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It's not just a good verse to write up on the fridge. It's one to live by. Honour your parents, children, your God-given guardians who will bring you up in the instruction of the Lord that you may have life, eternal life. Now, there's an aspect there where as kids grow older, that level of authority and oversight in their life changes. I mean, we're going to fly over to Hungary soon and our son's getting married. He's an adult. his relationship with us has changed over time. But certainly when he was young, that's right. His job was to obey, our job was to raise him up. Christian family declares gospel hope. The authority of a steadfast, loving God is very different from the fickle human authority, ever-changing and very prejudiced, always centred on us, on me. Our hope is a steadfast, eternal rule, a rule which places our best interests at its core. That is what gospel-centred marriages and families attest to. So I'm asking the question, will that attitude be reflected in our marriages? All right, so the gospel gives dignity, it gives hope, and the gospel gives freedom. Paul has often been criticised for not seeking to abolish slavery, and he does not speak against slavery here in this section. If Paul doesn't take this opportunity to speak against slavery, how can we say that there is freedom in Paul's gospel message? We'll take a look at chapter 6, verse 5. We see bond slaves obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by way of eye service, not just doing things when people are looking, not as people pleasers, but as bond servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free. That's what he's saying there. You honour Christ by seeking to please him, doing all you do for the glory of Christ, not for the glory of others, not as eye pleaser, not just to be seen to be doing the right thing, but actually doing it because you know that your Lord watches over you. And you also know, verse 8, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this they will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or free. The time is coming where our reward will be paid in full. I heard someone describing when we go to glory, as we'll look back on this life and it'll be like, oh, remember that time we spent that one really bad night in that terrible hotel? It'll be like that. But the gospel speaks into every life and offers an eternal freedom, whatever your circumstance and whatever your culture and whatever abuses your society is into. See, the sufficiency of the gospel is good news for everyone. How horrible would it be if the gospel was only good for powerful people and people who could get their act together? Paul's message is certainly one of freedom in the gospel. Paul's writing, as he's writing this letter, he's in prison. And so he knows all about captivity. He's a prisoner for the Lord, chapter 4, verse 1. His concern is not for his own release, but for the spread of the gospel, because that is where eternal freedom is found. These prison chains don't constrain me. It's as if Paul is saying that. The gospel constrains me. It's estimated that 30 to 50% of the population were slaves back then. Some were prisoners of war. Some were convicted criminals. Others, and lots of them, were bond slaves. That's where you sell yourself into slavery so that you can eat. Your life was certainly lived at the whim of your master. For some slaves, there was no station in society, no legal rights. And throughout history, Christians have rightly and remain at the heart of movements seeking to free slaves. I'm listening to the biography of William Wilberforce at the moment, and he was a great champion in getting rid of slavery out of the British Empire. Today there's one movement I know called A21, capital A21. They're seeking to stop human trafficking. Apparently it's more slaves today than ever in the history of the world. But I just want to, for the record, Paul makes a very passionate plea for the slave Onesimus in his letter to the slave owner Philemon. You can read that. It's not that Paul's not against slavery or not seeking freedom. What he's saying is that the gospel trumps this. Now, if you're focused on this life only, it's very short term. But the point is not that, it's not even slavery can constrain your freedom in the gospel. That's good news, isn't it? No human power can constrain the freedom of the gospel. Well, marriage and weddings has been on my radar quite a bit lately. We had the art and science of marriage course that we're finishing off this afternoon in here, and that's been an intensive weekend of thinking through marriage. We're getting ready to fly over and celebrate our son's wedding, so that it's fun and exciting and surprising that the baby we brought home yesterday is now getting married. That just doesn't seem right. We are stoked, and we want to celebrate. And in that wedding, it's been so lovely that both our son and his fiancée have said, put Christ at the centre of the wedding day. Put Christ at the centre. I mean, that's that is so good. But it's not just the wedding day, is it? It's not just the wedding day. It's put Christ at the centre of every marriage, every day. Put Christ at the centre of every relationship, every day. Put Christ at the centre of every situation you find yourself in every day. That's what Paul is calling us to hear. He teaches us how the sufficiency of the gospel for all is reflected in household relationships, and he calls on us to live gospel-shaped lives.